This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today, I'm talking to Eric Vickrey about a new book that he's written called Season of Shattered Dreams, Post-War Baseball, the Spokane Indians, and a Tragic Bus Crash that Changed Everything. It's a really interesting story that I'm guessing even the most diehard baseball fans would not know anything about. And it's nice to have you here, Eric.
Thank you, David.
I know you're a Washingtonian, but I'm really curious to know how you discovered this story and what about it attracted you to do a lot of research, which you did, in order to write this story.
Yeah, so I'm actually not a native Washingtonian. I moved here about 10 years ago. And like you, I've been a lifelong diehard baseball fan, grew up rooting for the St. Louis Cardinals near my hometown, and moved out here about 10 years ago. And it was really during the pandemic that I began writing about baseball, just as something as more of a hobby. And I started writing articles for the Society for American Baseball Research. And I was digging into newspaper archives, looking into information about a player named John Leavitt, whose claim to fame was he played in one major league game and his one hit was off of Bob Feller.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
If you're going to only have one hit.
Exactly.
Really good.
So I was looking for information about Leavitt in 1946. He played for the Bremerton Blue Jackets, which was a team out here in Washington State. And I happened to see that the Blue Jackets were scheduled to play the Spokane Indians in June of that year. And their series was canceled because the Spokane team was involved in this horrific bus accident. And I had never heard of this. And the details of it were shocking. The fact that 9 players were killed and 6 others injured. And that really just stuck in the back of my mind. And I think I went to Google and started finding out what I could about it. And I realized there wasn't a whole lot out there. So it just kind of stuck in my mind. And as I was looking for my next book project, that thought kept lingering, and I decided to tackle it as a project.
Well, it's an amazing story, and I really like the way you approached it, which is to really focus on the people rather than, you know, the crash is a big deal, but it really enabled you to talk a lot about the people in the era. This was right after World War II, and you know, I think most people are aware that World War II disrupted baseball. But I don't think I don't think people are as aware of what it did in the minor leagues as they are. You know, we know that in Major League Baseball, lots of the players were drafted or joined the Army, the Air Force, the Navy. You know, the famous ones like Ted Williams goes off for 3 years. And that they had to bring up lots of players who were less, you know, in theory, less than major league quality players. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Commissioner Landis agreed that they would play baseball instead of canceling it in order to provide Americans at home with entertainment. Thinking about not knowing how long the war was going to last and it was going to be hard times. They wanted people to go to the movies. They wanted people to watch baseball, you know, to be just, you can't be thinking about war and death and fear and the anxiety about your kids being off at war where the world's coming to an end. So it was important to keep baseball going. But there was a huge minor league system at that time, much bigger than we have today. And you talk about what the effects were on the minor league system, which I don't think I'd ever really thought about.
Yeah, that's right. Before the war, there were 44 minor leagues in operation across the country, and seemingly every small town even had a team. And it was a really important source of entertainment because this was before most homes had television. So people went out to the ballpark during the summer as their source of entertainment. The minor league players were kind of local celebrities. But during the war, like you mentioned, most of the major leagues continued on, but most minor leagues had to shut down just because of the lack of available players. There were only 9 minor leagues that remained in operation during the war. And then in 46, you know, all the troops had returned, baseball was resuming, and all these minor leagues were kind of reorganizing. And that's when the story takes place in 46.
And of course, then, you know, during World War II, they were scouring the planet for players. And then yes. after World War II, all these soldiers are coming back, and lots of the really good players had played during the war in military units. They were, you know, so they were still players, and they want to come back and play. And so all of a sudden, there's this avalanche of players looking for jobs. And so could you talk a little bit about the Pacific Coast League and its importance in that period of time prior to the expansion, which was much later, 15 years later, of the Major League Baseball into the West? Prior to that, baseball didn't go past the Mississippi River. So all of those towns in the Midwest and all of the towns and cities in the West Coast had their own leagues that were pretty good.
Exactly. And in many ways, the Pacific Coast League was like a third major league, essentially. And the ballparks drew as many fans as the major leagues. And in some cases, the teams paid salaries that were on par with the major league. So for a lot of players in that era, playing the Pacific Coast League was very desirable. And especially if you're living on the West Coast, a lot of players aspired to play in the Pacific Coast League just as much as the major leagues. So it was an important league in that era. This was 10 years or so before the Giants and Dodgers moved west. So the Pacific Coast League was the preeminent league up and down the West Coast from Seattle down to San Diego.
So Spokane was in the Pacific Coast League. Bremerton was also?
So they were actually in a league called the Western International League, which was kind of like the a step below the Pacific Coast League. So the PCL teams often sent their extra players down to cities like Spokane and Bremerton for them to get experience. But they still held the contract, so they could recall those players at any point.
Right. And I forgot that Spokane and, you know, those Western International League teams were maybe the equivalent of a double A, maybe.
Exactly.
PCL would be triple A. But also they had relationships with the major league teams. So you could have major league players sent to some of these lower teams in order to do more development work.
That's right. Yeah. And a lot of, in that era, a lot of teams, minor league teams, were run independently. They weren't affiliated with one specific major league team. So in the case of the Spokane Indians, for example, they had formed these sort of working agreements with the Oakland Oaks and San Diego Padres of the PCL, but also the New York Yankees. So they had several players from the Yankees farm system on their club.
Right. So there are three guys that you kind of focus on as the core of your story. Ben Garrity, who was a little bit older, Jack Lorkey, who had come back from World War II, and Vic Pacetti, who was this young phenom. So you kind of have a range of three characters there. Mm-hmm. And you start with them and you follow them through a lot of events that led up to and then after the bus crash. Maybe you could talk a little bit about why those, you know, about those three guys and what they, you know, what their stories mean to you.
Yeah. So what I did more or less was I researched every player on the team and found out as much as I could, and then sort of formed the outline of the book. And what I found in those players specifically was they each had very unique and sort of fascinating stories. You mentioned Ben Garrity. He had already played in the major leagues back in the 1930s with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And he was sort of at the tail end of his playing career in 1946 with the Spokane Indians. He was 33 years old, and he aspired to be a major league manager in his future. And it was actually one of the players who survived the crash. And then you had Jack Lorkey, who was, as you mentioned, on the way up. He had just returned from World War II, had fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And Jack's story is just almost out of Hollywood. He had survived the war and then was nearly involved in a plane crash upon returning to the United States, and then was sent to the Spokane Indians by the San Diego Padres, and was actually recalled to the Padres on the day of the accident, and found out as the team was traveling west across Washington State just an hour before the crash. So he had said goodbye to his teammates and then hitchhiked back to Spokane. So he, again, nearly was involved in this accident and acquired the nickname Lucky after that.
I would think.
Yeah, very, very fitting. And then you had Vic Pichetti, who was the youngest player on the team. He was 18 years old and by all accounts was the most talented player on the team and a surefire future major leaguer. And unfortunately, Vic was one of the 9 players killed in the accident. And I was able to find out a wealth of information about him, not only from newspaper archives as they were following his rising career, but also from his family, who had kept scrapbooks full of photos and letters for decades and made this available to me for the book. So as I kind of gathered all the information, I figured those would be good representatives of the team to hone in on and tell their stories.
Yeah, I mean, anything that kills people as in an accident is a tragedy for all of the people who are killed, as well as the survivors, their family members, and anybody who manages to survive. You know, I mean, it's hard to imagine 9 people on a sports team being killed all at once. I think the closest thing I could think of was that football team, the Marshall University football team.
Yeah.
A crash. But I think this is the largest baseball related accidental killing. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. In American professional sports, it's actually the most tragic accident in terms of the number of people killed. There have been others, college and amateur accidents.
But so 9 were killed, 6 were injured, but for some of them, the injuries were severe and maybe ended their careers.
That's right.
So, probably for people who are, I mean, I did a little research. I understand the terrain a little bit. I've been to Spokane, I've been to Seattle, but I think for people who don't know about the geography of Washington State, it's probably useful to talk about where it happened, how it happened, and why. Why did this accident occur?
Yeah, Washington State has very varied terrain. As I'm sure you've experienced, eastern Washington, where Spokane is, very dry and flat. But then as you head west across the state, you go into the Columbia River Valley, where the Columbia River runs. It's very, very picturesque. And then as you head further west, you get into the Cascade Mountains. Right. This is about 50 miles east of Seattle. And back then, the road was just a 2-lane road. So, you know, now we have Interstate 90, which makes the trip about 4 hours. But back then, it was a good 8 to 10 hour trip on this sort of gravelly 2-lane road that crossed over Snoqualmie Pass, which is at an elevation of about 3,000 feet. And so that's where the accident occurred. The team had just gone over Snoqualmie Pass, and the bus was headed downhill and encountered a vehicle that had crossed over the center line, and it forced the bus driver to sort of swerve to the side of the road, and he ultimately lost control of the bus, and it went through a cable guard wire and down into a rocky ravine.
That's an amazing, I mean, it's almost like a movie in your mind, because, you know, you see crashes in black and white in old movies that are very similar to how this happened. You know, interstate travel is so different. We still have accidents, terrible things happen, but those kinds of roads are less well traveled now. So accidents like that don't happen as often as they did then. And you also mentioned that the car in question did not stop, kept going, and was never identified. Think about that. You know, if that car realized, the driver of that car realized what had happened, wouldn't that person live with an incredible burden for the rest of her or his life? I just could not fathom what that would have meant to someone.
Without question, yeah. And then similarly, you had the bus driver of the Spokane Indians bus who actually survived the crash. And similarly, he dealt with sort of a lifelong guilt related to the accident. He certainly was not at fault, but he never spoke of the accident. There was an interview that his daughter did after his passing, the Spokesman Review, the newspaper in Spokane, wrote about how Glenn Berg was his name. He never spoke of the accident and actually never went to another baseball game for the rest of his life. So you can imagine how that affected him.
Well, and I think it affected Jack Lorke, clearly. Yeah. There's a, you know, yes, lucky, but also the survivor guilt.
Yes.
And the and he had, as you out, you know, you kind of talked about that afterwards, he wanted to go on and become a major league manager. In order to do that, he had to be a minor league manager. And minor league managers had to ride buses endlessly because that's how they traveled, how minor league teams traveled then and actually still do. So he had to, he clearly had PTSD, and he had to suffer through that. And probably self-medicating with alcohol.
Yeah, actually, I think you're referring to Ben Garrity.
I'm sorry, Ben Garrity, not Jack Lorke.
Yeah, they both survived the, you know, well, Jack was not involved in the accident, but Ben, yeah, survived the accident and then, yeah, dealt with the PTSD of this by drinking. And as you mentioned, he had to travel on buses to sort of fulfill his mission of becoming a major league manager. And by all accounts, he was just a baseball savant. Henry Aaron, who he managed in 1953 with the Jacksonville Braves, called Garrity the best manager he ever played for and perhaps the best manager who ever lived. And other players kind of echoed those sentiments. So even the players who survived the crash certainly, you know, were affected by it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I thought his was a pretty sad story and kind of tragic on multiple levels because potentially because of the accident and his kind of damaged being, he drank heavily. And that, even though he was a great manager, and you kind of portray him as a brilliant manager, and in fact, his winning record, as you pointed out, is the best in minor league history, I think.
Yes, it's certainly up there as far as I could find from my research. It has to be one of the best ever, and it's on par with many major league Hall of Fame managers as far as their major league records.
But he would never. The Braves. He worked for the Braves. He was really loyal to them, obviously, and they never would promote him to the major leagues, which seems to have been because he was a drinker, not because he was a insufficiently good manager.
Exactly. Yeah. He won at every level as he was rising through the minor league ranks, ultimately topped out at AAA. But his reputation as a heavy drinker was known in the major league ranks. And Howie Bedell, who was later a front office scouting director, told me on record that was the reason that Ben Garrity never got the chance to manage in the major leagues.
Were you able to meet anyone who was actually involved in this crash, or had they all passed away by the time you came along?
Yeah, unfortunately, they had all passed. I was able to interview a number of family members of the players who both survived and family members of some of the players who were killed, as well as several players who played for Ben Garrity in the minor leagues.
Yeah, he seemed to have had he managed a lot of well-known, if not famous, I mean, aside from Hank Aaron, who's probably one of the best known, but
yes.
he influenced a lot of people. So he was a known person in Major League Baseball. It's sort of interesting to see what all of the connections are. Like Casey Stengel appears here because of being a manager in so many places for so long.
Exactly. Yeah, he managed Garrity when he was coming up in the major leagues, and then had moved to the Oakland Oaks in the mid-40s.
Right.
And so Vic Pacetti, who had signed with the Oakland Oaks, actually played for Casey Stengel in the spring of 46. And it was Stengel who actually sent Pacetti to Spokane so he could gain more experience against younger players. And then Casey appears again later managing against Jack Lorke's
right.
New York Giants in the 51 World Series. So,
right. We should talk about that because Lorke goes on to play Major League Baseball. And that was pretty cool because, you know, if you're a baseball fan, you know the 51 Giants, you know that game. And he was there.
Yeah, he was actually, so when Bobby Thompson hit his walk-off home run, just before that, one of the Giants players was injured sliding into third base. And so Jack was told he was going to enter the game to play third base if the game had gone into extra innings. And of course, Bobby Thompson changed history. So things could have gone very differently, maybe if Jack had gotten into that game. But Jack did have a very successful rookie season with the Giants in 47, hit 11 home runs and was one of the top rookies in the league, but then kind of settled into more of a utility role after that.
All right. And how long did he last in the major leagues?
He played in 7 major league seasons with the Giants and Phillies, and then played in a number of additional seasons with the Pacific Coast League.
Right. So he was another baseball lifer, play no matter what, no matter where.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think in those days, I mean, it's still true to some extent, but I think it's harder to be a career player because there are fewer leagues now. And yes. In the 50s, there were still, I mean, they lost some after World War II, but there were still a lot of minor league teams. So you could not earn a great living, but you could earn some money and be a player. I mean, even major league players had to have jobs in the off season.
Yes. So
it was still respectable to play baseball, as a minor league player and just enjoy the game and have fun and make a little money. And, you're getting to play ball, right? And that was something that is harder to do now, I think.
Yeah. I think the roster spots nowadays are more valuable in terms of, teams just trying to develop prospects. Whereas back then it was, older players could kind of hang on and fill a roster spot and still earn a pretty good living.
Right, like the movie Bull Durham, which I still like.
Great example.
It's a portrait. You've got that, the grizzled minor league veteran who never quite makes it, out of the minor leagues. And I think there were more of those kind of players in those days. I mean, it still amazes me. I see, if you look at a roster now in the minor leagues, you'll still see, former major league players. A couple years ago, you were watching them on TV, and now they're in AAA. And you think, that's amazing. I mean, because major league players make so much more money. Even the kind of marginal players, they're making by comparison to the rest of us, they make a lot of money. And so I kind of think, if you can't play Major League Baseball, it's kind of such a step down to be in AAA when you're 30 or 31 and you played in the majors for 5 or 6 years, but they still want to play.
Exactly. And I think there's always that dream that, they can get back. So, and that's a lot of players will play until they're told they can't play anymore and they're not offered a contract. So,
Especially if you're a left-handed reliever.
Yeah.
You can always, there's a job for you somewhere in baseball.
No doubt.
I it's hard to fathom how this event kind of disappeared from, it's not so much, I mean, in a way it didn't disappear from everyone's memory, but it isn't something that very many people know about it. I mean, what's your thinking about why it was such a forgotten piece of history? Because it was such a major event.
Yeah, it was certainly a major event and was known at the time across the country. It appeared in newspapers coast to coast. It was in the Sporting News, the New York Times. So it got a lot of coverage in the days after that. And then on anniversaries of the accident, 10 years, 20 years, there'd be articles, particularly in the Spokane and Seattle papers about it. But it seems like over the decades, as the years have passed, it's just kind of faded from our collective consciousness. And I was surprised.
I guess maybe it has something to do with it being in the Northwest and Spokane being not Seattle. It is, no offense to Spokane and all the people who live there, but it's a more isolated place. It doesn't have as much connection to national media. And
yes.
I guess, I don't know. I mean, it is, I sort of think that there, most of us who don't live in the Northwest, partly the time difference. You know, we don't see the news that happens when we're awake. Sometimes, you know, either something happens and it gets reported, it's overnight and you don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like the baseball games in the West. You know, you're on the East Coast, you're asleep when the game's over. So you don't know those players as well. You don't know the places. But it must have something to do with that. But
I think that definitely factored in. Yeah. And the fact that these weren't necessarily, you know, household names, and people may have assumed that they were just sort of young, no-name players. But really digging into their histories, they really were talented players. A lot of them had just fought in World War II, and they had interesting stories. That's one of the reasons I decided to pursue this book. So I realized there were a lot of human interest stories.
It is. No, I think that's the right thing to say about it. I think it's hard not to feel the loss of all of them, but Pacetti, who I was calling Pacetti all along, but Pacetti as someone whose opportunity to be, it was cut so short. I mean, like, and it makes you think about World War II, you know, all of those human beings who die when they're 18, 19, 20 years old, never having the chance, you know, we don't know what, there's just so much potential lost. And that happened there too. I mean, it sounded like, And you know, the way people wrote about young players, you know, and it's the same thing today. Here's this great phenom, 18 years old. You know, I remember the bonus babies in the 50s and 60s. You know, these guys paid $100,000, and the rule then was they had to be on the major league team because they got the big bonus. And then they flamed out because they never got experience. They never got to play at all the different levels to hone their skills. And so you never know what would have happened at Pacetti. He might not have become the great player they thought he would be, or he could have gotten injured. Yeah, there's so many things that can happen.
Exactly, yeah. I have no doubt that he would have played in the major leagues, but yeah, as to how good he would have been, would he have just gotten a cup of coffee and flamed out? Would he have been a MVP caliber player? Very, very hard to say, because he was so young and still very much early in his career.
But the descriptions of him as a great player were prior to him dying. You know, usually, you know, when someone passes abruptly, accidentally, sometimes afterwards everyone will boost them. You know, their view of those guys will, or people will be altered by their passing. But I think you reported that, you know, he was pretty highly thought of before he died.
Yeah, and one thing I detail in the book is the fact that he played in this Esquire All-American game. It was a kind of an all-star game for high school players across the country. And Vic was voted to represent Northern California at this game, which was played at the Polo Grounds in New York in 1944. So he traveled across the country by train and played in this game. His manager was Mel Ott, and the opposing manager was Connie Mack for this game. Yeah. And the opposing starting pitcher, who he doubled off of, was Billy Pierce, who went on to have a long time major league career. So Vic had certainly proven himself on a pretty large stage. That was at age 16.
Yeah, and if Mel Ott thinks you're good, you're probably pretty good.
Exactly.
But you're right. I think that was a great, there are lots of really cool stories in the book that I just haven't focused on. But one of the ones that I learned, I had no idea, was that during World War II, they didn't play spring training south of the Mason-Dixon line. So they had to find all these northern locales. I think I remember, somewhere along the line, I'd run across that before, but I didn't realize that, you know, they were playing spring training in Connecticut, where I live. You know, that was amazing to learn. So,
yeah, the Boston Braves had their spring training in Connecticut, and Ben Garrity was actually recruited back to the major leagues some 6 or 7 years after he played for the Dodgers by Casey Stengel. Again, that name comes up. Stengel was managing the Boston Braves at that time, and you know, they practiced in the snow and played at indoor gymnasiums to work out because of the restriction on travel during the war.
Right, that was pretty cool. So you found a lot of really interesting stuff along the way. I mean, you made it a really interesting story, not just a, you know, a simple narrative about at a particular event. So I appreciated all of the storylines that you brought into play.
Thank you. Yeah, that was part of what made the book fun to write. It was so much more than just about the accident. There were so many layers to the story, and trying to tell each individual story and the greater narrative of this bus crash was a challenge and also a lot of fun in writing the book.
Well, I'm really glad you did it, and I want to thank you for spending half an hour talking to me about it. This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I've been talking to Eric Vickery. His book is called Season of Shattered Dreams, Post-War Baseball, The Spokane Indians, and a Tragic Bus Crash That Changed Everything. Thank you so much, Eric.